Welcome to Caring on the Go, your exclusive access to the latest news and commentary from the current issue of Caring for the Ages, the official newspaper of AMDA, the Society for Post-Acute and Long-Term Care Medicine. Support for this podcast is brought to you by U.S. Post-Acute Care. This podcast is eligible for ABPLM pre-approved certified medical director credits. Details will be provided at the end of this podcast. And now here's your host for Caring on the Go, Dr. Wayne Saltzman.
Welcome to Caring on the Go. As we celebrate the inauguration of our 46th president, I'm so pleased to welcome to the AMDA on the Go podcast family this inaugural segment of our newest podcast, Caring on the Go. Caring on the Go will spotlight articles and stories from the AMDA, the Society for Post-Acute and Long-Term Care Medicine's magazine, Caring for the Ages. For this segment, we welcome Caring for the Ages Editor-in-Chief, Dr. Elizabeth Galick, to discuss some key articles from the January and February 2021 issue. Dr. Galick is a nurse practitioner in long-term care and community-based settings through a clinical practice with Shepherd Pratt Health System. She is a professor at the University of Maryland School of Nursing, where she teaches in the Adult Gerontology Primary Care Nurse Practitioner Program and conducts research to improve care practices for older adults with dementia and their caregivers in long-term care. Dr. Galick, welcome to this exciting first edition of Caring on the Go.
Thanks so much, Wayne. I'm thrilled to be here today with you, and congratulations on your recent achievement of 100,000 downloads of the AMDA family podcasts.
Oh, thank you so very much. You know, Dr. Galick, before we begin the segment officially, I thought that we would take this opportunity to get to know you and Caring a bit better. You know, how would you describe the value of Caring for the Ages for the reader who receives it in the mail or turns to it online?
So Caring for the Ages is a news magazine that's really focused on the post-acute and long-term care professionals to bring hopefully timely and relevant news and commentary about clinical developments and the impact of healthcare policy on long-term care medicine.
You know, the role of editor-in-chief recently transitioned from the Society president-elect, Dr. Carl Steinberg, who was editor-in-chief for some time now, to you. What interested you in assuming the role, and in how did you envision the evolution of the role under your leadership?
So, as I tell many people, I'm, been a clinician a lot longer than I've been in academics. And so the most important thing for me is to make sure that we're sharing reliable sources, research results, new issues with the clinicians who are providing care to our post-acute and long-term care population. Mm. And it was that reason when this opportunity became available that I threw my hat in the ring, so to speak, and felt that my experience serving on editorial boards, doing a fair amount of writing, and really having that experience clinically would be helpful to the readership of Caring. Some of the other things that I wanted to do, consistent with AMDA's outreach, to try to reach an interdisciplinary audience with Caring for the Ages.
So there have always been a number of regular contributors. Are you planning on keeping that type of format, you know, with other contributors adding on kind of on a as needed basis?
So yes, thanks for that question, Wayne. We really have three different categories of contributors. We have stories that are spearheaded by our health reporters, Joanne Caldy and Christine Kilgore. Mm. And they interview a variety of sources with expertise in the field or the topic that we're addressing, and pull together a coherent story on whatever the issue is. We also have several regular columnists. And some of the ones that are tried and true and we couldn't imagine caring without them would be Dear Dr. Jeff. I like to think of him as the Dear Abby of long-term care medicine. And, you know, he really brings some, addresses some timely topics. Some of the things he's talked about more recently have been issues regarding antibiotic stewardship. He even did an excellent article on racial injustice in long-term care. And I like the approach because he identifies a problem, kind of gives us a little background on it, but then gives really practical solutions. Another article that has been longstanding is On My Mind by Carl Steinberg, our president-elect. And that also addresses a lot of timely topics. So we're definitely keeping those. So some of the newer columns focus on ethics in long-term care, and the ethics committee helps to lead that. And we have 3 to 4 articles from them a year. We also have a new column on pragmatic research that Milta Little and her colleagues address a clinical problem and go at it from analyzing a research article. And we also have an interdisciplinary team case study article that appears about 4 times a year.
Wow. Wow. Wonderful, wonderful contributors and ongoing wonderful contributions that I am looking forward to not only reading on a regular basis, but now hearing about on Caring on the Go. So let's look into the January and February 2021 issue of Caring. Christine Kilgore, one of the regular authors that you mentioned, has presented the article, Doctors Without Borders Lends a Gloved Hand to U.S. Nursing Homes. You know, I, probably like many, thought that this organization tended more towards developing countries or medical needs outside of the United States. This article tells us so much more about the organization and its help during COVID-19. You know, tell us about the article and the work of Doctors Without Borders, you know, how it helped nursing facility residents, healthcare workers in the United States, and its advocacy for resources and sustainability.
Sure. So Doctors Without Borders is a medical humanitarian care organization. And it's been around for about 50 years. And typically we think about it working in conflict zones and particularly on various infectious disease outbreaks throughout the world. Their work in the United States has been more limited, but really felt that there was a need during the height of the first outbreak of COVID-19 and particularly how has that hit long-term care facilities. So they worked with 31 nursing homes in Michigan and 21 in the Houston area. And really their goal was to kind of go in and assess the situation and to really see what the staff and residents needed in terms of infection control. The one thing that's kind of interesting to note for people who may want to access their materials, they're all free for use. And you can use the materials that they developed to evaluate a facility's infection control policies and also to do education with staff and not just clinical staff, but other staff in post-acute and long-term care settings as well. One of the areas that they noted that really was in many instances overlooked was the housekeeping and kind of environmental services sector and saw some improvements in infection control in working with that population as well.
I thought it was a really interesting article. Dr. Gaelic, I also saw in this article that Doctors Without Borders didn't just help with the facility or with the patients, but it also helped the healthcare workers themselves, especially with regard to their own health. How did they do that?
Yes, thank you for bringing up that excellent point. So we know that Doctors Without Borders is well known for its crisis work that addresses mental wellness for healthcare workers around the globe, because we can only be effective caregivers if we are supported and taking care of ourselves. And so some of the things that they did in these nursing homes was to try to build trust and to really listen to the healthcare workers in these settings. So they had social workers and psychologists do individual debriefings, group sessions on stress, grief, and coping mechanisms. And they shared really that how there was a theme of stigma within this sector, so that individuals who worked in post-acute and long-term care who were doing their very best under extraordinary circumstances were really not feeling appreciated at all and were feeling stigmatized by some of the reactions they encountered with acquaintances or even people they knew well.
I think we're going to have the Doctors Without Borders folks on the Amd on the Go podcast. It sounds like a fantastic.
They would love that. They would love that.
No. All right.
And I can give you the information about them because they're really a lovely group.
Note to self. Dr. Gaelic, past society president, Dr. Stephen Levinson, regularly submits a column on regulations. In the January and February 2021 issue of Caring, he's written an article entitled Clarifying and Improving the Role of the Psychiatric Consultant. So very interesting article. But, you know, to those of us who are committed to care in the post-acute long-term care setting, we're familiar with this role. You know, if the role is available to that facility. And Dr. Levinson talks about the challenges in utilizing the psychiatric consultant to address behavioral and psychiatric issues in the nursing home. What does Dr. Levinson want us to know about the state of the psychiatric consultant role today?
So I think Dr. Levinson's point in the article was one that emphasizes a true partnership between the primary care providers in post-acute and long-term care and the psychiatric consultants. And the psychiatric consultants can be psychiatrists, psychologists, psychiatric social workers, psychiatric nurse practitioners. So how can we as primary care providers try to really partner with the psychiatric consultants in that setting, because ultimately it's going to lead to better resident care. And he offered a couple of suggestions that I think help to address some of the challenges. So we know that one of the main challenges is that most nursing home staff and practitioners manage behavioral and psychiatric issues hesitantly, and they really prefer to let someone else handle it. I had a recent experience with this where there was I got a call about a gentleman who had been behaviorally stable. He had dementia, but had been stable for some time. And he began taking his shoes off in the evening and throwing them. And the request was for a psychiatric medicine or a psychiatric consult. And as it turns out, what we were able to discover through exam and more information was that, more history, was that the resident actually had an infection in his foot and was exhibiting a behavioral symptom, but there was a medical cause. And I think that that's one of the big challenges that Dr. Levinson spoke about in this article, was really the importance of accurate diagnosis and ruling out medical causes before proceeding to psychiatric ones. Some of the interventions or ways to partner with your psychiatric consultant, he recommends interviewing candidates if you have that option to try to get to see if you're on the same page. having a HIPAA compliant way of communicating regularly and inviting that individual, that psychiatric consultant, to attend rounds or medication related reviews. And now that we're all more accustomed to using virtual platforms, I think that's something that will become a little bit more feasible.
Absolutely. Wonderful. You know, what's what was interesting to me about the article, and you've already really mentioned it, was that there is absolutely no reason to think of the psychiatric consultant any differently than how we think of a consultant in the primary care office or in the hospital. It's really someone who helps us understand what is happening to the person in front of us when we have done the full evaluation and we cannot proceed any further on our own. Given what we know about the geriatric, psychiatric available providers, you know, we really want to utilize these folks at when they really could be of value.
Yes. Actually, I was reading an article recently in the Psychiatric Times, and in the United States, there are only 1,400 geriatric psychiatrists who are board certified. Yeah. So many of the providers we're working with maybe psychiatrists or psychiatric nurse practitioners, but their knowledge of older adults may be limited because there's not national standards in terms of training required dealing with older population.
Absolutely true. And we did an AMDA On The Go podcast with Dr. Leah Watson from Colorado, who is a geriatric psychiatrist, and we reviewed the limitations that we have. So I think it's very forward thinking to have Dr. Levinson remind us of the value that these folks can be brought in when they are brought in appropriately.
Yes. And just, you mentioned Dr. Watson, she's wonderful. And she's part of a new initiative within AMDA to address behavioral health and really provide more training and education to those of us in primary care settings to be able to do some of this more on our own, or at least feel more well-informed. And Dr. Watson and the behavioral health group will be submitting hopefully a regular column to Caring for the Ages as we move through 2021.
Wow, that is absolutely fantastic.
Let's talk for a minute about goals of care conversations. Now more than ever, post-acute clinicians should initiate these discussions with their patients. At US Post-Acute Care, our clinical team is committed to regular goals of care conversations with each seriously ill patient. We help our patients to think through their goals and express what's most important to them. Now we can develop a care plan that aligns with their goals and their values. Using a technique first developed by Ariadne Labs, these structured conversations have shown meaningful improvements in the quality, cost, and effectiveness of care. Our Chief Medical Officer, Dr. Kevin Henning, is highly committed to making the goals of care conversation a foundation of effective care for our clinical team. At US Post-Acute Care, that's what we think. Now we'd like to know what you think. You can reach us at uspostacutecare.com or on LinkedIn, and Dr. Henning will be happy to respond. Thanks for listening.
So, Dr. Galick, the January-February 2021 issue of Caring has an abundance of wonderful, wonderful articles. But the last one we're going to talk about is in the section called Caring Collaborative, and it's actually written by you. And it's called The Impact of COVID-19 Pandemic on Individuals with Dementia, in which you discuss the increased challenges the pandemic brought to residents of nursing and assisted living facilities who had the syndrome of dementia. Tell us a bit more about your review, especially with regard to the emotional and physical strains that have affected these individuals during this difficult time of pandemic.
Sure. So we know that individuals with dementia, in many instances, lacked the underlying capability to really follow procedures or protocols or issues related to social distancing or masking. And their perceptual impairments made some of the things we were doing to try to help with visiting or video chats or window visits, it resulted in them often being more confused and distressed. And so within the context of the pandemic, we saw clinically that people withdrew, became apathetic, some lost weight, and really they engaged in much less functional and physical activity. Others had a different picture where they had more anxiety, distress, or motor restlessness. And it was very challenging to manage both of these symptoms. So what we learn about the physical impact is a couple things. And this was just a review of some of the recent literature in 2020 that specifically focused on individuals with dementia living in long-term care during the time of COVID. There was a small retrospective study that compared individuals who had Alzheimer's disease to an age-matched group of individuals in long-term care without dementia. And what it did show was that there was no significant difference in the severity of COVID-19 pneumonia between the groups. And this is different than what we see with kind of the pneumonia we're used to seeing, where those individuals fare a bit worse. Also, individuals with dementia had more of an atypical presentation with COVID. They didn't have the respiratory symptoms as much, and instead had more diarrhea, more change in mental status, and delirium. However, there were no significant differences in terms of mortality. And the one thing that we kind of see over time, and this is not only focused towards long-term care, so this is the population in general. Information from the CDC showed that deaths due to Alzheimer's disease and other associated dementias were about 20% greater during the summer of 2020 than was anticipated based on previous year's data. So to put it in more even stark terms, there were 1,000 excess deaths a week among individuals with dementia compared to expected death rates based on projections from past years.
Wow.
So we know that some of this was likely due to undiagnosed COVID-19 infection, but also I think what many of us are seeing, whether it's in post-acute and long-term care or more community-based settings, is the negative impact of the prolonged social isolation, physical inactivity, and the more limited access to medical care. So that really summarizes the physical impact. In terms of the psychological impact, I mentioned before, it's mostly the most common symptoms are apathy, anxiety, and motor agitation. While depressive symptoms were responsive to treatment in some of the literature I reviewed, it was the apathy that really significantly worsened over time and resulted in some physical outcomes in terms of functional decline and skin breakdown and an increased rate of hospitalization. And kind of lastly, if we think about some of the non-farm strategies that we use to manage behavioral and psychiatric symptoms in the context of dementia, many of them require being up close and interaction with others. And so I had a nursing assistant share with me that she felt like over half of her tools in her a virtual toolkit to deal with these behaviors were kind of stripped away with her due to the infection control procedures that we had to have in place to keep them physically safe from the infection.
This article really presents some nice tools and food for thought on, especially moving forward, on how to really support these unique individuals. Dr. Gaelic, in the time that we have left, I just wanted to draw attention back to the beginning of our discussion, in which you had introduced some of Caring's regular staff writers. They really do contribute significant special interest articles, and the January-February 2021 issue is really chock full of them. Will they continue to do so? Will they continue to be as prolific as they have been?
Yes, in addition to our regular columnists who are AMDA members in many instances, we also have excellent health reporters. Joanne Caldy and Christine Kilgore have both really produced some excellent articles that not only summarize topics from conferences, but also, as you mentioned, really pursue clinical articles as well as special interest articles like the one on Doctors Without Borders. And they'll continue to work with us. The other thing we're trying to do with Caring for the Ages is to have more, as we call, unsolicited submissions. And we've been able to attract some of these more recently, particularly during the time of COVID. I think people felt the need and the want to express themselves in writing about some of the things they were seeing or learning. And we've had some excellent articles by people kind of on the front lines, medical directors, attending physicians, nurse practitioners, social workers. And that really kind of gets to my next goal with Caring for the Ages, is to try to elicit more participation from some of our younger members or people who were recent future graduates. And so stay tuned for that.
Wonderful.
As we move through the year.
Oh, that's wonderful. This concludes our inaugural segment of Caring on the Go. What a wonderful discussion. Under the leadership of Editor-in-Chief, Dr. Elizabeth Galick, Caring for the Ages continues to review and reflect the wonderful work being done by the Society for Post-Acute Care and Long-Term Care Medicine leaders, members, and community. Really, take a look at the January and February 2021 issue. Dr. Galick, this was fun. We should do it again. Thank you for spending your time with Caring on the Go.
Oh, thank you so much, Wayne, and I'll look forward to our conversation next month.
Great. References for this podcast can be found at www.caringfortheages.com. Until next time, I'm Dr. Wayne Saltzman for Caring on the Go.
Support for this podcast is brought to you by U.S. Post-Acute Care. If you are a physician and interested in obtaining ABPLM pre-approved certified medical director credits for certification or recertification, go to our new learning management system at apex.paltc.org. Click on podcast and follow the link to this latest episode. Thank you.